pathprojects.co. They now own the rights to pathprojects.com. So you can get there three different ways: pathprojects.co, pathprojects.com, or you can go to our partners page, hit the banner, bam, you're there.
But there's only one way to get to the finish line, Scott, feeling good, and that's with the right gear. You've got to have it like a second skin. It needs to work for you, not against you, and chafing often comes from things working against you.
Comfortable is the one word that I think of when I put this stuff on. I feel like I'm home.
And you don't have to go run the trail.
Did you know that you can have comfort, like comfort food? There's comfort shorts and base layer.
And you don't have to go out on the trail to just enjoy it, because I've worn them around town. I put the shirt on. I mean, you can sleep in this stuff. It's the best.
I shower in mine.
Well, you're a never nude.
I'm a never nude. Hey, the guys from Path Projects are going to be up at the Yellowstone Half Marathon this week. So if you downloaded this podcast tonight or tomorrow, on June 8th and 9th, they're at the West Yellowstone Half Marathon. Go by, check out the tent. They're going to have some gear there. You can feel the, even if you don't put it on, even if you just feel it in your hands, you're going to go, there's a difference here, and you'll be convinced to give it a try.
Do what Scott and I have done, and put it on and
replace your wardrobe. Do it. You deserve it.
We pushed everything to the back and everything up front as Path Project.
Put this out as a carrot at the end of a tough training week or schedule.
You deserve it.
If,
yeah.
If you reach a goal or you set that goal out there, this is your reward. Go get yourself some Path Projects gear
at pathprojects.com.
We are just over a month away from the Under Armour Mountain Running Series first event in Copper Mountain, Colorado on July 14th.
As trail runners, we're always trying to share the passion with other people. And this is an event where you can do that, because there's training classes, there's racing going on, and there's just a community festival.
If you go to uamountainrunning.com or link over from our banner page, you can see the three races that they have coming up in the next 3 months, and you can also see training plans. So if you don't know exactly how to tell your friend how to train, tell them to log on. There's training plans for each of the events. Then you can schedule this vacation, go with them there, hold their hand a little bit, and then you can participate in all the different race formats, 5K, 10K, 25K, 50K. They're all there for you.
So if this sounds good to you and 20% off sounds even better, go to our partners page.
Click on the banner, register, get 20% off, and get somebody else involved in the sport.
Tailwind Nutrition, they've had it right all along, Scott.
Don has a topic in this podcast where he does either a fact or fiction topic about hydration and electrolytes.
Don't let it out of the bag, Scott.
But here's the bottom line is Tailwind Nutrition has it right. You need to have both in order for your body to use the water efficiently.
You need electrolytes inside your hydration, and they've done all the thinking for you, the right amount, the right kind. All you have to do is drop it in the bottle, shake it up, and drink it.
No brainer, no gut bombs, tailwindnutrition.com.
Just as important when you get off the trail, Scott, you've got to put some Tailwind Rebuild in to get your muscles ready for the next training event. That's right. Scott's shaking his head because he has a mouthful of Tailwind Nutrition Rebuild right now.
Mm-mm, good.
Go to tailwindnutrition.com, go to our banner on our website, and click on over and all that other stuff. Scott, you usually pull me out of this one. Go to tailwindnutrition.com.
Ladies and gentlemen of the wide, worldwide ultra-running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
This might be one of the most interesting podcasts ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing. There's a bunch of, like, old brothel hookers, like, buried out here.
No, I've listened to your podcast for many years, and it's, yeah. Yeah.
I do own my own bar. every Friday morning on I Run Far, we open up and open up the taps.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
She knows the format. We're recording.
I know the format.
Perfect.
All right, here we go.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation.
My name
Scott Ward. Hey, I get to, I'm doing the intro. Okay. I get to say my name first.
Take two.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott War.
I am Don Freeman.
I'm Andy Jones Wilkins.
I am Donna Nicarta.
Better. Ah, perfect. And we'll tighten that up with a little editing.
You'll splice that? Do you know how to do that? Do you know where the edit button is?
You have to cut the tape at 45 degrees and join them with some Scotch tape, not double-sided.
Is there special Scotch tape, or you just use the stuff you buy at Walmart?
That's what I use during editing. It's Walmart-driven. I don't go for the extra expensive stuff. You can hear a bit of
We're
a skip.
We're on a budget.
You hear a skip. We're trail runners. I've used duct tape in a pinch. Okay.
Moleskin? Moleskin? Does moleskin work?
I have used it. So we're here today to do a little fact or fiction. AJW, you're about to tell us about where you are, and why don't you line this thing out, AJW, and anywhere that you're missing some accuracy in the facts, we'll clear it up for the listeners. AJW, what are we here to do? How can this even be happening? AJW, hold on.
We can't hear you. We can't hear you at all.
The edit nightmare begins. We can't hear you. Speak again. AJW, tell us a little bit about this fact or fiction.
Well, actually, where are you?
Oh, I'm in beautiful North Star at Lake Tahoe here for a CTS training camp, and I climbed up the top of Squaw this morning. It was outstanding. I'm about as happy as I've been in the last 6 months.
And Donna Nicarta resides in London, England, but she happens to be sitting right next to AJW. Why is that, Donna?
That's because I no longer live in London.
Oh.
I quit London. I quit my job. I quit London lifestyle, and I moved to the south of France to train for Western States.
That explains the French accent. Yes.
Yeah. I work remotely now, and that allows me to come out here to California for 3 weeks to get some heat training, to acclimatize, and to do a little bit of training here.
And she is one of the lucky few that got drawn for Western States. This is her first attempt to toe the line at Western States. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I was last picked. I was the last name out of the hat.
I too. You and I have that in common. We were both the last picked out of the hat. That's awesome.
So fact or fiction, are we ready to do that, Scott?
Yeah, so those of you who have not listened to the previous, we've only done one fact or fiction episode before, but the way that this works is each of us has come to the table with a topic. And it can be a fictional topic, it can be a true topic. Each person is going to explain what that topic is. Then we will round table and vote whether that topic is true or false. And then there will be a reveal and additional information if it is necessary.
A discussion, a challenge perhaps.
Yeah.
And we'll dig deep into the information.
This is like a typical trail run where you're running with your friend and he's telling you a story and you're going, that's a bunch of BS.
Okay.
So this is a little bit of trail running type thing.
So who's up first? We shouldn't make Donna go first because she's never done it. She may need to kind of listen so she gets kind of a feel of the rhythm and the process.
I vote you do. You go first. You seem to think that you have some good topics.
Okay.
I vote for Freeman.
That's because you didn't want to go, and Scott, you didn't want to go, but I'm happy to go. So, you know, I came today. Well, I woke up this morning without anything, which is pretty typical from the start of most of my days, and I didn't have any topic. and so I came with a topic. I'm bringing some knowledge today.
Okay.
So sometimes as you recall, I may have come up with something about Shasha Mahari or something that ran marathons backwards
that's
or
right.
something fun like that. But today
we're going to have to link that last podcast because that was a fun one.
But today I'm coming with knowledge, and a lot of it has to do with hydration in the fact that we're entering some hot climate. We've got racers like Donna that's going to go through some canyons that could be treacherous with heat, and she needs this knowledge.
Okay.
So here I go.
If it's true.
It may be. If we lose a pound of weight, we lose pretty much a pound of water. When we're running, true or false, fact or fiction?
Oh, boy. A pound of weight. So we're out there running. We lose a pound of weight. But is that all water?
Easily replaced with drinking water. And is it pretty much a pound of water for a pound of weight loss?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay. Get closer to the mic there, AJW.
So pound for pound. If you lose a pound of weight, you're saying the statement is it is water.
Correct.
I'm going to agree with Scotty on this one. True.
Donna, are you going to join your teammates there and say true, or are you going to venture off into the uncharted land of false?
I'm going to go false. I think that's too easy.
That's a lot of water, though.
That's a lot of water. And so this came out of the book, you guys weren't paying attention, Endure by Alex Hutchinson.
Oh.
And it's right in the chapter about thirst. And so let me share with you that 1 pound of weight loss actually equals only 0.2 pounds of water loss. And here's how it works.
Donna wins.
I'm at the edge of my seat.
Here's how it goes. The body burns fat and carbohydrates, and in that process, it releases two things. It releases carbon dioxide and water. Those are byproducts. So get this. This is how great the body is, and this is why I was excited to share it with you. You know, we are built to run. We're built to go out and endure and lose some fluids because it may be a while before we see water again or we catch what we're after. So our body is equipped to sustain ourselves for some time. So here's the wisdom of the body. The body stores carbohydrates in the muscles, and when you use that carbohydrate, it unlocks. For every gram of carbohydrate unlocked, it unlocks 3 grams of water. So in this carbohydrate we have stored in our muscles, also there is a stored water source.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we use it, it breaks it down, and the body sees that as new water and actually uses that as part of our water availability. And so here's what they did. They went out to prove that this was true. And how did they decipher this? They went out and they put a tracer on some water that's out there. They added a neutron to some hydrogen that's already on the water molecule. And for every pound of weight loss, they found in the circulation there was only 0.2 pounds of water loss because you lose part of the carbohydrate that's already there. So the body stores its own water on board, not just water that we intake or water that's there. It's in the process itself.
Okay. I don't know whether I understand
that
completely.
That's some fascinating stuff. Don, I'm impressed.
I'm still a little confused. So what is the weight? If you lose a pound of weight, what is that? It's something is exiting your body. It's
right.
Water, 0.2 pounds of water, and carbohydrate?
Carbohydrate that was already stored as water. I know it comes out as water, but as it's sitting there static, it was a carbohydrate in the muscle, not counted as water.
Okay. I see. So it is actual, I mean, if you were in a jar exercising, and all the stuff that comes off of you is all water, but it didn't go in as water.
Part of it was the glucose or the carbohydrate stored inside the muscle.
So here's my question,
yeah.
And maybe you got to this point in the book, but in order for you to replace that pound, do you need to replace it? I guess you wouldn't need to necessarily replace it with water. You could replace it with carbohydrate and water or protein or fat or whatever.
It may be coming up on my next topic, so stand by.
Okay.
Hey, and I have one other note here that I wrote down. The ability to adjust the amount of salt in our sweat, we are able to keep our plasma osmolality. Thank you.
easy for you to say.
So let me break it down and just talk about it. This salt that we have on us is our body's way to try to keep our plasma at the right level of hydration or fluid. So it loses and kicks out a lot of this sodium so that it can maintain the right blood osmolality.
So by taking more salt, you're actually not doing yourself a favor, right? Because if it's trying to regulate the amount of osmolality in your body, and it's kicking the salt out by taking more salt in. It's saying, wait, no, I don't want that.
There is that question, right? So
that's a question.
Let's save that. Let's save that.
Was that another thing?
Yeah, because
all of yours are related. Is that what you're telling me?
It's all related. Okay, guys.
Oh boy,
I'm done.
That was good.
I don't know if it was good or not.
All mine are frivolous compared to that one.
Well, I don't know if I got my point across too well.
John, how many topics was that?
Essentially, it was one podcast, and the people that know about this stuff are saying he's got it all wrong. But but somewhere in there, if you rearrange the words, the facts are there. Okay.
All right. Somebody in Tahoe needs to come with a topic.
All right, I'm ready to go. So, you know, you guys know that in the last few years of ultra running, there's been all kinds of attention paid to how much better the athletes are these days, how much faster and more fit. And we're seeing all these course records go down and so forth. Well, this is June, and therefore everything I'm thinking about all day and all night has to do with Western States. So my topics have to do with Western States. And this first one is one that's really dear to my heart. I think anybody who's a fan of the sport and a fan of Western States knows that in order to succeed at Western States, you have to be ready to bring it and bring it hard at the end of the race. Yes, there's attention about the high country and there's attention through the canyons. But really, if you can bring your A game, preserve yourself enough, and get to the finish line as fast as possible from Forest Hill to the finish, you're likely to pass people, you're likely to have a successful day. Well, we also know that there's a lot of Western States geeks out there, and I count myself as one of them. And if you study the race splits, that is the section splits on the course, there is one record split that stands out above all others. And that is the fastest man ever to run during the race, to run from Highway 49 at mile 93.5 to the finish line at mile 100.2. People might think that that person was Rob Krar or Tim Tweetmeyer or Timothy Olsen or Jeff Rose or Jim Walmsley, but it was none of those people. It was, in 1983, Jim Howard. Jim Howard ran from Highway 49 crossing to the finish in 56 minutes. And in the 20 plus years since then, no one has done it faster. Fact or fiction?
Well, let's think. So he ran, what was his overall time? Do you know?
Time that year was in the mid 17s.
I'm going to go absolutely true. I have heard this, and I think I've heard it now a second or third time. And so AJW, you have me as a absolute fact.
You know, I would.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, if it's 17 hours.
I mean,
that's pretty fast.
Yeah, but the guy you're sitting next to ran a 17 hour. Okay, keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. You know, I believe Don.
Yeah, I think you could run it 7 miles. You could do that.
I believe Don probably is correct on this. However, for some reason in the back of my mind, I thought that iconic year when Jeff Rose just turned it on at the end, I thought that there was some record that he set at the end of the race. So I'm going to say false, okay, just to be contradictory.
Okay, so we have two facts, one fiction. AJW.
It's true. Mm. It's true. Jim Howard did it in 5 minutes. Rob Krar did it in 57 minutes in 2013. And Jeff Rose did it in 58 minutes in 2010. Interestingly enough, the fastest I ever did it was in 69 minutes, 109, which I thought was blazing fast. But a little known fact about the Jim Howard year is it was incredibly snowy in the high country. So it is a little bit misleading, that 17 hour, because he was unusually slow in the first half of the race and really came on strong in the end. And I would ask the listeners, sometime if they're bored, go out to Highway 49 and try to run from the Highway 49 crossing to the finish line on fresh legs and try to do it in 56 minutes. It's amazing to think that he did this in 1983 with 1983 technology in 56 minutes.
You know, let's give a little description. Donna is running this iconic race. She's going to be running from Highway 49 to the finish. Talk a little bit about the terrain there, Andy. What makes that section so fun and unique?
Well, there's pretty much four parts to it. The first part, after you cross the highway, you have a climb that is, you know, it's only about 400 vertical feet over about 8/10 of a mile, but it's pretty technical. It's you know, it's in the dark for most people. It's not runnable. It has some steep little pitches, and then it tops out up on the Cool Meadow, which is this beautiful meadow, one of the most beautiful places on the course. And from that meadow all the way to No Hands Bridge, you're basically going downhill, descending all the way to the American River, almost 1,000 feet. And anybody who's had a good split in that section has been able to hammer that downhill all the way to No Hands Bridge. Of course, you cross the iconic No Hands Bridge and you begin the third part of that split, which is first a gentle and then a steep climb up to Roby Point, which is the point at which you enter the town of Auburn. You turn onto the pavement. And then the fourth part of that split is 1.3 miles from Roby Point to the finish, a steep uphill on pavement, and then rolling roads triumphantly bringing you down and across the tight bridge and ultimately into the stadium and around the track and to the finish line. It's one of the most incredible 6.7 miles in ultra running.
I don't think anyone on the planet could have, on a whim, given as much detail about that part of the race as AJW just did.
You know what occurred to me? How many other sections could he give you that same description?
All of them. All of them.
Hey, I still have two more topics. So.
I mean, I think he could give us from the top of Devil's Thumb down to Michigan Bluff. I'm sure.
Yeah, 7/10 of a mile into that section, there's a route that you want to be really careful of. You don't want to trip on that. It's 7/10 of a mile. Then you hop over. By the way, that route is 16 centimeters in diameter. And then,
you're up, Scott.
All right. So here is mine. Mine are so lame compared to this. I thought I came with strong topics. Anyway, this is my truth or fact or fiction. So there is a food restaurant chain in America, Donna, called Chick-fil-A.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great place. Anyway.
It's true.
Yeah, that's true.
That part's true.
That part is true. Okay, here's my topic, that the company is always in their test kitchen trying to come up with new recipes and trying to become healthier. They have forbidden the use of one seemingly innocent ingredient, and that ingredient is iceberg lettuce. And the reason why, according to the vice president at Chick-fil-A, is that iceberg lettuce has absolutely no nutritional value.
Well, it does not have nutritional value. I think that's true. I remember learning that. There's some fiber that has some benefit, I think. There's some fluid in there, and that has some benefit, but there isn't any essential nutrients, as I recall. I'll defer to my colleagues.
Well, you got to stand up and say whether you think it's fact or fiction.
Oh, I think it's fact.
Make a stand.
No, okay. I'm sorry.
You think it's fact?
Yeah, okay. Fact. And they're concerned about the E. coli.
It's fact or fiction that iceberg lettuce doesn't have any nutritional value?
You know, that's a very good question. I would say yes. So it is true that Chick-fil-A forbids iceberg lettuce in their test kitchen, because they said it has no nutritional value. So the fact or fiction is, does iceberg lettuce have no nutritional value?
Okay.
And you're still staying.
I'm going to say that's fiction. I think iceberg lettuce has nutritional value.
Okay. Donna?
Donna?
No, I disagree. I think we've listened to this in a podcast before about iceberg lettuce, and I don't think it has.
There's another podcast that talks about iceberg lettuce nutritional value? And you listen to it?
So, Scott, reveal.
What was your answer?
I say it's true.
You think there's no nutritional value?
Yeah, there is.
Andy says that there is nutritional value, and Donna says
there is no nutritional value.
There is no nutritional value. Okay, it's actually false. Iceberg lettuce does have nutritional value.
I am going to
tell you, iceberg lettuce, let's see if they have a serving here. A medium leaf of iceberg lettuce has 1 calorie. It has, let me get this up here so I can read it, vitamin A in it. It has IU folic, 2.3 micrograms, potassium, and calcium. All of those nutrients in iceberg lettuce. A medium leaf of iceberg lettuce.
I'll never look at iceberg lettuce the same again.
However,
yes,
there's a caveat.
What is it?
Of all of the leafy greens,
yes, it's the lowest.
It is the lowest. So this is my education piece here. So instead of grabbing iceberg lettuce and just having that as a salad, you know, you can put other nutritional vegetables in there and a nice healthy dressing, or you can use butter lettuce. Butter lettuce is better, and the best is romaine lettuce. All of them have the same calorie count, but romaine lettuce has way more vitamin A, way more IU folate, has way more potassium and calcium. So choose romaine lettuce when you're in the vegetable aisle.
The takeaway is the greener, the better.
Isn't romaine the same color as iceberg?
We need to go shopping, Scott.
Okay.
Okay, Donna.
Hi. Well, my topic is brought from home. And there's a big advertising campaign from a very famous beer brand called Guinness is Good for You. And
AJW, whatever he says, I'm siding with.
Andy's already nodding. It is good for you.
I don't know. This must be rigged.
So there was a study done by the University of Limerick on runners who drank Guinness before a long run. And they proved that drinking Guinness before a long run will actually increase your speed. They did two studies. They did a control group and a study group, and they proved that after 3 months of training and having one, this is important, 3/4 of a pint, not a full pint, 3/4 of a pint of Guinness will make you faster because Guinness is good for you.
Well, the first thing, I would like to make the first observation, and the fact that she is an amazing salesperson, that she's told us 3/4. So it really makes me want to say it's true because she's regulated the amount. She's very careful, not a pint, but 3/4. But I think that's a red herring. I think we're chasing a fact.
You're saying that it makes them actually faster. So there's carbs.
I think.
Right. Oh, go ahead, Andy.
Let me say this. I think Guinness is good for you, but I think it's false because I don't think they did this study.
Ireland.
Okay, so you're saying false. I'm going to say false. Well, let me think through this because Guinness does have carbohydrates in it, so that's giving you some fast burning.
It's got a lot of iron in it.
What's that?
It's got a lot of iron in it.
Iron.
That's the kicker. It's the iron.
The iron in Guinness.
Yeah, well, tell me how long the run was.
I'm going to say false.
I'm going to get a couple of clarifications here. How long was the run they were testing?
It was marathon times from their previous marathon times to 1 year later marathon times.
Yeah.
That's how they proved the faster.
Well,
on average, for the two groups.
I'm going to go true.
Has a lot of detail.
Yeah, a lot of detail. I'm going to go true. I want to support you, Donna. I don't want this to be a hostile environment for you as a newcomer. So I'm going to go true. That's a fact. Drink Guinness. It's good for you. I think the tap room has it on the ready down there. It's a regular. So?
That's false.
We didn't hear the answer. What was it?
False. It's false. False. I just made it up.
She made the whole thing
we
up.
We do drink Guinness afterwards. But
that was a strong. That was a lot of detail.
We got to be careful with Donna now. I think we learned a little bit about her. She can tell a story.
I'm up.
I'm Irish. It's in my DNA to tell stories. And drink Guinness.
And drink Guinness. Okay, Freeman, you're
okay,
up.
Okay, here's a simple one. Yep. All right. We do know that there's a synergistic relationship between man or woman and plant life, trees. At that we
eat them.
We use oxygen,
yeah,
and we breathe out carbon dioxide, and in turn, they take the carbon dioxide and convert it back to oxygen.
Uh-huh.
There's that synergistic relationship. So I ask you, fact or fiction, it takes one tree to offset the oxygen use of one person. One tree, one person.
How big a tree?
The average size tree and the average activity person, not your ultra marathoners and not your... you know, very, very tall tree. So just in general, so stay away from the small details. One tree, one person.
Hmm.
Fact or fiction?
Donna, what do you think?
I think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go true on that.
AJW.
I'm going to go false. I think there's no way they could actually measure that. I think it's a cool idea, but I and maybe it's true, but I don't think they've actually bothered to try to figure that out.
Oh, AJW, they put people on the moon. They've done all kinds of stuff. We can't figure out what a tree and a man and their relationship. So I don't like your logic.
Yeah, that's. I mean, man on the moon is a lot more interesting than like tree person. I mean, come on.
Okay, good. Okay, Scott.
Okay, so I have a little bit of background here. I'm not an agronomist, but I work for a company that is an agronomic company.
Ooh, what's that word?
Agronomic. That means they study how plants grow.
Okay.
And the nutrition of plants and the transpiration and how they live. I am going to say it's false. Mm. I think that it takes many trees to offset the carbon dioxide that one human puts out. So I don't think that it's equal. I think it takes many trees to make an equal exchange of gases.
Well, false is the right answer. Scott, you are right. And so AJW also false. I think Donna supported it. It takes 7 to 8 trees to offset the oxygen consumption of one man. Thanks. That was a Google search. So I don't have any other resources to confirm that, but a good Google search.
Okay. Well, everything on the internet's true.
Yes, it is. So 7 to 8 trees offsets the oxygen.
All right, Andy, you're up.
You know, Scott, Don, you know this is called Trail Runner Nation, not like Tree Runner Nation.
Tree Hugger Nation?
I have no idea what that has to do with trail running.
Well, it's closer than iceberg lettuce, okay? I mean, we run by trees and we depend on their conversion of carbon dioxide to get us up the next hill. Iceberg lettuce never did anything.
There's a lot of ultra runners who hit Chick-fil-A. There's a lot of runners who hit Chick-fil-A right after a run too. So,
who's up next? I think AJW.
Sticking with my Western States theme, I've got another Western States history for you all.
Okay.
I think everybody listening to this podcast knows that the most decorated ultra runner, maybe in history, at least in American history, is the world-renowned Ann Traysen. And Ann, of course, won Western States 14 times and was, in fact, the closest female to winning it outright that the race has ever seen. One unknown tidbit is that Ann, in 1995, actually held the lead, was in the outright lead coming into, we talked about this already, the Highway 49 crossing, mile 93.5. She had gone ahead of Tim Tweetmeyer on the climb up to up the Corey climb, and was in first place when she arrived at Highway 49. However, when she stood on the scale, she was too much underweight. And the aid station people told her that she had to sit and drink and eat and gain some weight. And in that interim, Tim Tweetmeyer came into the aid station, weighed himself, was fine, and passed Anne while she was sitting there. And the rest is history. Tim proceeded to finish the race in first place. Anne finished a scant 4 minutes behind him, but he did actually hold the lead at mile 93.5. Fact or fiction?
Oh, you know what?
I gotta say false, because it's just tugging at my heartstrings. I mean, I it's got to be false.
I'm gonna go false too.
They don't have a scale at Highway 49.
Well, in 1995 they did. I don't know, Scott, but I do know that I think that story, if it were true, we would know. Yeah. I don't think that would be obscure. I think that would be like, hey, everybody knew that. Yeah. So I think not. I do know from watching Race for the Soul here recently as a warm-up for this event of Western States, that it was 4 minutes or 5 minutes, as AJW said. So that he's got a lot of fact woven into this story. And I think that's why he's trying to protect himself with so many facts that are true, and then he sneaks in something that isn't, so he drags us along. So well, I say false.
I'm going back. I'm thinking about this more. There, I don't think when they had scales at aid stations, there was one at 49. That's too close to the finish. They wouldn't have weighed her with 7 miles left.
That's a strong statement.
I'm going to say false.
Okay. Donna.
Yeah, I'm going to go false. I think it's too good a story. It's too good. With all the times AJW's been on this podcast, and I've listened to them all, I would have heard that story. I can't think any new stories.
Okay, AJW, come clean.
All right, it is false, but I need to mention a couple of things. First, Scott, absolutely, they did have scale all the way up until they got rid of scales. They had a scale at Highway 49.
Really?
And it was actually a real pain in the ass that they had it there, but they did. The real story of that year is Anne did come in to the Auburn Lakes Trail aid station, mile 85, when Tim was still there. And so they were technically tied. But as soon as Anne got into mile 85, Tim bolted out of there like he stole something and ran the last 15 miles, you know, with anywhere from a 3 to 5 minute lead, and then ultimately won the race by 4 minutes over Anne in the, of course, infamous fire and ice year of 1995, where they extended the cutoffs because it was so snowy in the high country and so hot in the canyons. Just a historic race. But no, in Anne's 14 wins, she never was actually in the lead at any time.
Hmm. Hey, that is a great story, and it prompted me to share with you one more fact about my last topic, if you don't mind, because it's right on this, and it does involve Western States. So they went out and measured, not at Western States, they predicted and measured that a runner in a half marathon could lose up to 1 to 3% of their body weight and still maintain adequate hydration. From just losing the weight wasn't necessarily putting them into a dehydration deficit where they could no longer perform or function well or end up with cramping or anything else. And they projected that the longer the races were, the more percentage of their body fat, their body weight they could lose and still be adequately hydrated. And in Western States, they did a study and found that athletes were adequately hydrated at the end and lost 4.5 to 6.4% of their body weight and still maintained adequate hydration, which is one of the reasons they removed the scales from the aid stations, because just losing weight isn't a predictor. Reason enough or predictor to take someone, make them sit down and drink more fluid.
So that's interesting. Yeah. What year did they remove the scales?
Oh, just a few years ago. I think they made them optional in 2015, maybe even 2014. And then by 2016, they were completely removed. Now there's no weigh in at the beginning, no scales at all.
Huh. I used to have that down pretty good. If I was getting low on weight, I'd keep my pack on. I would take my.
Going into Last Chance 1 year, I grabbed a couple of rocks and put them in my pockets. Sure.
I would step up on the scale, and I knew that I was dangerously close to being on the verge. And I would tell them before I stepped up, I would tell them the last weight that I was or predicted weight, and I'd tell them the one on my wrist was was bogus. It's been off all day, even from the start. And this, and as soon as my weight came up, the first thing I would say is, perfect, right on the mark, right on, and I'd step off. And they were afraid to challenge me on that point. Okay, who's up?
I think I am.
Okay.
Okay, so...
running podcast.
This
Scott.
Is run. It's actually about running.
Okay.
And specifically about running. Can you run with iceberg lettuce in your pot? No, I'm joking. No, this is about running. This is my story that if you take the same intensity of a run or a jog, but put yourself in three different environments, one being on a treadmill, the second one being outside running, and the third one being in a pool, aqua jogging, I think they call it, in a pool. So you're like chest deep or what, shoulder deep in water. All three of those, you're doing the same intensity of exercise. My story is that running on a treadmill, you lose less, you burn the fewest amount of calories, and running underwater, you burn the most amount of calories.
I've got a strong opinion on this. You guys can weigh in, and I'll jump in anytime.
How do you measure that?
Calories burned.
Just calories burned.
Calories burned in 1 minute.
I'm going with true. I think Scotty's actually done his homework on this one.
Yeah, I'm going to go false.
Just to contradict AJW.
Yeah. There you go, Don, you're the tiebreaker.
Reset the question, Scott. Not the whole thing, just the
question is, if you are on those three venues, treadmill, outside, or in the water, that treadmill, you burn the least amount of calories, aqua jogging, or in the water, you burn the most amount of calories.
Well, that's obviously true. You've got a motor on a treadmill helping propel you, move your foot underneath you.
Same effort. Same exertion effort. So it's not the same pace, same effort.
He's trying to sell you. He's trying to sell you, Don. He's trying to sell you.
Yeah. I'm
careful.
So maybe they I'm not sure how they measured same the effort, but same effort, like same heart rate, same
Well, you're raising your leg and you're raising it against water. And that's going to burn a little more calories and be a little more. So that's where I'm going. I'm going to say treadmill's the least, and you get out in the other two, you're saying true? Yeah, you're fighting air when you're running. Air's coming on you. And when you're in water, you're lifting your leg through water. That takes more effort, more calories, more something. And so if that's true, then I'm true.
Okay. The answer is true.
Oh, and for my reason.
This topic evolved because the original topic was, do you burn more calories on a treadmill or outside? And you actually do burn more calories outside if it was level. It's because there's different variables like wind. If you're running against the wind, that's more resistance, and you're going to burn more calories. But the treadmill actually was the most, and I can give you some specific calories. So if you're just outside running, you burn 8 calories per minute. This is just a relative. More people burn different calories, but relatively. The same person, the same intensity, jogging outside burns 8 calories a minute. If you're jogging underwater, you burn 11 calories per minute because of that resistance. Because when you're bringing your foot back up, you have
pushing
more
resistance water
versus water, air.
Lifting. Yep. Lifting water. Punching your leg through water.
Yep.
Takes calories. Good. Okay.
You know, tomorrow, Trail Runner Nation is going to become Pool Runner Nation.
Aqua Jogging Nation.
All right. Aqua Jogging Nation.
Who's up?
Donna is.
Donna.
This is a lesson in researching races before you sign up to them.
Okay.
And this is a personal lesson. I signed up to the race by Western States Qualifier as 100K in the Czech Republic. Because I like to travel, you know. And when I got to the aid station food provided was bread, duck fat, and onions.
Oh, yeah.
Pure false.
Oh, you know what?
That's all they had was bread, duck fat, and onions?
And salt.
Of course, yeah. I mean, you know, that goes without saying.
Oh, my gosh. That's got to be true.
That's got to be false, because she wouldn't be in this race if that's all she could eat.
I'm saying true. She couldn't have made that. She could not make up bread, duck fat, onions, and salt.
She made up a Guinness story.
I know, but this is that's too outrageous. It's got to be true.
I'm going to go false.
This is a Western States qualifier. I'm going true. I mean, I don't even know if they have duck fat in the Czech Republic, but if they do, yeah, I'm going true.
So are you thinking AJW, because all qualifiers need some intensity and some hurdles, and if they didn't have enough vertical gain, that they said, okay,
they
Craig,
threw in some duck fat?
Here's what we'll do, Craig.
Yeah, I'm thinking Thornley said, look, these people survived this race on bread, onions, and duck fat. They can certainly survive the canyons of Western States.
Okay, so I'm going true now. I'm going.
Oh, you changed your mind.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Okay, Donna, you have three trues.
It is in fact true. Oh. It is actually a race that we do, and that's what they provided at the aid stations.
How do you eat that? Do you spread the duck fat on the bread?
Yeah, and then you have chopped onions, because you know we're not ridiculous. So you chop the onions, and they just spoon the onions.
So did you really eat? Did you eat the duck fat?
No, I heard about it before, and I went to McDonald's and brought burgers with me.
I don't know which was worse for you. It's probably healthier to eat the bread and the duck fat.
But the locals do it. That's what the locals run on.
Huh.
I'm up.
You're up.
It's good to stay hydrated. It's good to stay hydrated on races, no doubt.
That's true, Don.
It doesn't matter if it's fluid. And you take it in, whether it has some, you know, carbohydrates, some glucose in it, whether it has
some barley, or some fermented barley,
perhaps, or some electrolytes, or just plain water. You just need something. Fact or fiction?
How long you running?
You're out there all day, half a day, doesn't matter. The question is, are there better hydration sources that prove and perform better than others? But just put in some dang fluid. Your body will take care of the rest. It has sodium. It has all the stuff it needs. Just get some fluid in there. That's the critical point.
I'm saying that you need. There are better substances out there
than just water.
There are better combinations that are better for you than other combinations.
Okay, so you go. You're saying that it's
What are you saying?
I was hoping you'd clear that up for me. I'm saying there are better. It doesn't matter. The fact is, you can put anything with fluid, any kind of ingredients in it, and it's all the same.
I'm saying false.
False to that.
False.
AJW and Donna. Not in that order. Whoever would like to speak up.
I'll go. You're saying that the fluid is what matters, not what's in the fluid.
Correct.
I'm going true.
You're saying true. Just get the fluid in there.
Any fluid.
Get the if it's the amount you need, you're gonna use it. If it's not enough, you're gonna pay the price. You can get other things. You can get sodium. You can get calories. You can get other electrolytes other ways.
Good. So we have on that side. You know what I've noticed here, Scott?
What's that?
When they're together, there's something that happens when you're in close proximity that you align yourself with that person. I mean,
I think we were not
fact,
aligned
fact,
on any
I think
of them.
I think we need to do one of those game show podcasts, because I think Donna and I could pretty much kick y'all's asses.
Well, you've had a pretty good record of that, regardless. So here we go. Yes, we'll get Donna on for that. Post-exercise rehydration in man. This was the out of the European Journal of Applied Physiology and Occupational Physiology. And what they said was they went out and they took athletes, eight of them, and they had them lose 2% of their body mass through exercise. And then they rehydrated them. Afterwards, they said, here, we're going to have you drink one of these four drinks. One will just be water with some glucose in it. The other is water with sodium chloride. The next drink, the third drink, potassium chloride. And the final, the fourth one, had everything in it. Had the glucose, had the sodium chloride, and the potassium. And here's what they found out. They found out that you're better off having sodium chloride or an electrolyte in the drink for it to then move from the stomach and move into the bloodstream. And that was the key. That there, if you just had glucose in there, no difference. If you had glucose and the sodium and the potassium, there wasn't the benefit as just the electrolyte. You need an electrolyte. It didn't matter whether it was sodium or potassium. It just needed, in their study, to be an electrolyte and absorbed well. So here is my question to you guys. Since we know that we're tying these couple of these studies together and our knowledge base, right? Mm-hmm. We have classically gone up to aid station tables to get some sodium, take some S-caps, dip some potatoes in our salt on our potatoes and eat it to avoid cramping, right? That's our cramping solution. And then they go out and they have told us, well, through our studies, we have found that sodium isn't lacking in the bloodstream and there's no correlation between sodium content that's in our body there and the cramping. So that leaves us kind of in a spot of, well, what's up? And so after reading this and thinking through it, I think the conclusion might be this, that we need to take that S-cap or we need to take that salt on that potato, then to allow that fluid to move through our stomach or small intestine into our bloodstream. That's where we need the sodium. It's not because we need more in our blood. We need the sodium then to be a transporter of that fluid into the blood. That's where it's lacking. Otherwise, we just slosh around. And I've experienced that and learned this early on. When you feel like you're a water balloon just with water inside that balloon, sloshing around in your stomach, you take some sodium so that it can start moving through. And I think that's where these S-caps and all these things that we do for cramping really helps, is because then we can move the fluid back into the bloodstream to help us out. So I think that might be part of it. That's just speculation. What do you guys think?
I think you prepared a lot for this podcast.
I woke up this morning without anything.
I would say that it makes me believe even more our friends Jenny and Jeff at Tailwind Nutrition. Mm-hmm. They know that by having that in their drink, that it helps you hydrate better and faster and more efficiently.
So pulling up to an aid station and getting just straight water into something, because I've done that. I'm tired of drinking anything with flavor in it. Just give me water. It's important then to think, I need to get this water through me, so I better have something from the aid station table that has some sodium in it. So I don't think it matters if it comes from a potato chip or a potato dipped in salt. It needs to be there with your water. But coming through an aid station, don't forget some sodium or some electrolytes either in your bottle or in your hand so that you can move this fluid through you.
That's good information.
AJW, thoughts on electrolytes?
But isn't there a danger of too much salt?
I think it sounds good. Obviously, as Donna was just asking, you don't want to have too much sodium, so you have to walk that line. But I think your body helps you walk that.
Yeah, I think that comes from experience too, going out into training with different intake levels.
And I think just learning to listen to our body, right? Mm-hmm. And they say drink to thirst. That's what they say. And then we can lose some of this body weight, but drinking to thirst is an indicator. And I think when you step up to a table, your body will seek out salt and say, oh, that looks good. So I think giving yourself a chance to step up to an aid station table and kind of peruse around or think about it before you enter the station, what sounds good, that's probably what your body's lacking. Hmm. So we're attracted to some of those high salty foods when we need the extra salt.
Yep.
Okay.
Andy, you're up.
All right, I got one more Western States history.
All right,
topic here, in the geek department, and I'm sorry about this, but this one includes me. So if you're sick of hearing me, if you're sick of hearing me talk about me, you can turn it down on this part of the podcast. So
I was
absolutely.
For the record, I'm with Scott on this one. It's false.
All right, that's cool. You guys are going to call false already. So let me just, because I was absolutely astounded when I learned this, and it's never before been spoken on the Trail Runner Nation podcast. And this is the time. This is the big reveal. So everybody knows, right, that Scott Jurek won Western States 7 consecutive times, right? From 1999 to 2005, he won the race. Well, as everybody probably also knows, every time he won, somebody finished second place. And there's been all kinds of analysis about those second place finishers and how close they were to him at the finishing at the finish line. Well, everybody knows that in 2003, Tom Nielsen from San Diego was only 15 minutes behind Scott, and he has the dubious honor of being the closest second place finisher to Scott Jurek. Amazingly enough, for second place in closest to Scott Jurek second place finishers, it's a tie, a dead heat tie at 27 minutes and 38 seconds between Tim Tweetmeyer in 1999, the first time Scott won, and Andy Jones-Wilkins in 2005, the last time Scott won. 27 minutes and 38 seconds exactly separated Scott's crossing of the line from mine and from Tim's. True or false?
Well, I'm switching, Scott, to true. I think that's that's just too close, too many facts. He's got me. I'm swapping.
I'm staying false because 27 minutes, 38 seconds, exactly? Uh-uh.
Yeah, well,
it's not exact. Down to the second?
It wouldn't be a story. No. It wouldn't be a story unless it was exact.
If it was true, we would have heard about this story on or off the podcast. Huh. I'm thinking false.
You think he's simply changing a name? Maybe it wasn't Tim. Maybe it was 29 minutes and five seconds?
I think the story could be true, but the time, it's too close. I'm thinking he's fabricating the time.
So some facts are misaligned, but yep. But some major, the scheme is right.
There's
but
some truth
facts.
To it. Okay. I think he was probably the second closest to Scott Jurek, but I don't think it was a tie with anybody.
Okay, I'm going to tie, though, because I want it to be true. Donna?
Yeah, I think true. I think true.
Okay, AJW, so let's hear it. What is it?
Fact or fiction?
I know as hard as it is to believe, Scotty, it's true.
Wow.
It's true. And I just realized that today. I knew I wanted to have this topic on the show, and I knew Tommy was the fastest, and I went to the website, and wouldn't you know it, down to the second, 27 minutes and 38 seconds, Tweetmeyer in 99, Jones-Wilkins in 2005. Of course, the only difference is that Tweetmeyer won the race five times, and I never did.
Wow, that's amazing. Down to the second.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'd expect Gary Wang probably already knows that, because he's done so many numbers and crunching and spun it around a million different ways. I bet you he knows.
We could have phoned a friend.
I think you'd figure that out. You're going to be telling that story for how many years?
Of course, I've relived that moment so many times. Like, it's got to, you know, may taken a wrong turn or twisted his ankle. I mean, I wouldn't have wished that on anybody. But when you're in second place, there's so many. You're like one heartbeat away from winning. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I think
I have a quick one.
Okay.
That kind of dovetails yours, Don. And this is mine. It's very quick, very easy. Potassium will prevent cramping. We've all heard it. Eat bananas. And because those bananas have lots of potassium, and that potassium is going to help you avoid muscle cramps.
Fact or fiction?
Yep.
I'm going to go with just whatever Donna says. Donna?
I'm going to go fiction because I don't really know.
Okay.
We don't really know what causes it.
I think it's something that, like, carrots make your eyes better and you can see better at night or something like that. So I think it's one of those types of things. So I'm going to go with you, Donna.
Yeah, I am too. I'm with you on this sort of old wives' tale thing. I think there may be some benefits to it, but I think it's fiction.
Yeah.
You guys are all correct. It is false. They have done studies. Tim Noakes actually did some studies in his book, The Lore of Running. But exercise physiologists, they do know what causes cramping.
What is it?
And we've talked about this on the podcast with... and I can't remember who it was. I asked the guest, I get muscle cramps. How can I help avoid that? And he said, get in shape.
Brad Kearns said that. And
it was Brad Kearns. He said, get in shape. He said, muscle fatigue causes cramping.
And he cited someone else, and I can't remember his name to give credit to it, but somebody in the audience said at one of the triathlete events stood up and said, how do I avoid cramping? And the guy said simply, get in shape.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right, Donna, wrap this thing up.
Okay, my last one again, super quick. The Guinness Book of World Records currently has a guy called Dave who has the fastest marathon time of 5 hours and 33 minutes while knitting.
Oh, knitting.
Knitting.
You know, so far we've got the Guinness theme running again, and the guy with the first name but no last name, which is making it sound very story-like. I'm gonna say false. I'm gonna say that is not true. He wasn't knitting. He was running backwards. That's what I'm gonna think. I think you just changed.
I thought you did one for backwards.
I might have, or juggling or something.
Yeah,
there was a guy juggled too. So I'm gonna say false. Because you're a veteran now, Donna. I no longer feel I need to be gentle
and
or
she's Irish.
Protect you. Yeah.
Well, she can take care of herself. What's the time again?
5:36.
5:33 minutes.
Oh,
for marathon.
5:30. I mean, 5:33 seems, it seems like you could go faster.
While knitting?
While knitting.
Yeah. Knit one, purl two, though, HAW. I don't know what that means, but that's what they say when they knit.
I'm going with true. I think this actually is a thing. I'm going with true.
Okay.
I think that Dave is not a knitter. I think he has another hobby.
A juggler.
I think that he does hold a marathon speed record, but it's not knitting. So I'm saying false.
Okay. Donna.
It's true. He knitted a scarf and it was 3 meters. Verified by the Guinness Book of World
Records. Oh, man. You guys.
I'm telling you.
I think I just created a new challenge for me. Something that can get me out of bed and early in the morning is take up knitting and ultra running.
And allow you to be proud of a 5:30 finish.
I wonder if Strava has a category that I can start.
Very good. Well, Donna, we're excited as can be for you as you're getting ready for a journey of a lifetime. It's a lot of fun. And I think part of what makes Western States just so fun is the community, the culture, and the excitement that's around it. Certainly there are races with more elevation, and there are races that maybe get hotter. But all around, it's
there's
just
races with duck fat.
but all around we gather as a global community and stare towards Squaw and Auburn on that day and follow through I Run Far and all the other media channels that cover it so well, and it's going to be a lot of fun for you.
It is an electric weekend. There is electricity in the air the entire weekend.
And you may be sitting next to Mr. Western States right there, because that gentleman he knows those kind of details, and to describe the course like he did, I could see myself running from Highway 49, and because that's a training area for us. It's close to where we are, to Studio G. And as he was describing it, I could see each and every climb he's talking about, and wow, use him as a resource. He's got a lot of information for you right now.
Well, Donna, I'm thrilled that you're able to be here for these 2 weeks and really, really take it all in. As you guys know, Scott and Don, this is the best month of the year. And I mean, I look forward to seeing you guys in a couple of weeks when we do our pre-Western States podcast. But this is the best time of the year, and I couldn't think of three better people to spend it with having a fun game of fact or fiction than you guys.
Hey, did you see a pretty good lineup of competition this year? Just as a preview, without letting a cat out of the bag.
The preview of the preview.
I think there are tons of intriguing stories going into this race. Not just, and we'll talk about them in a couple of weeks. Not just at the front of the pack, but in a lot of these age group categories as well. I think it's going to be really exciting. But I mean, I think the headline for me is the women's race this year. I'm sure there's always interest in the men's race, and I'm sure there's guys who are going to run fast, but there's intrigue and excitement and fun in that women's field, and I can't wait to see it unfold.
Good. Well, we look forward to you unfolding it for us, because we rely on your wisdom and experience to bring all this together. Scott?
Go out and run.
And knit.
Moss.